Welcome again, guys. This is Billy Fletcher with the Op Lab podcast. And this, you know, as I say every week, I'm excited. This is a very fun experience for me. And couldn't be more excited today to have my good friend Russell here with me. You know, and so as we've kind of talked about in the very beginning when we did the intro for the podcast, my goal with this is, you know, not that Russell's an expert in certain areas, but a lot of times I think on podcasts we're, you know, you'll listen to them and they're, you know, sometimes we can't always relate because sometimes the people that I have on there maybe like they're at the elite level of whatever they're doing, right? And so, you know, sometimes we may not be able to resonate with some of those people. We might learn from them, but we not so can resonate. So one of the things that I want to do is even with the people that you might consider an expert in a certain field is kind of show their human side as well. But also bring in, you know, Russell's a good friend of mine and we, you know, we'll get into that more. But, you know, to have a conversation because everybody, in my opinion, everybody has a story, you know, and so sometimes, you know, this is just a way, from my perspective, is a way for us to get to know people better here at our gym, the people that we have here, but also, you know, that can relate to somebody in a whole nother, you know, state, country, whatever. You know, somebody's story may resonate, and if you can learn from that and benefit from that, and it helps make your life better, that's ultimately the goal for this podcast. So, you know, I'll introduce Russell a little bit, and then I'm going to let him kind of tell a little bit his story, maybe a little bit of how we met. We may have different views on how that all came to be, but one of the cool things for me and one of my passions is Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And you know, as I reflect back on that whole journey for me, I really kind of recently, you know, we were talking about this, Hoff and I were, and when I think about Alliance, for instance, in the beginning when I started training jiu-jitsu, I, like a lot of people, I think back at that time was, you know, we'd only seen jiu-jitsu in the UFC. Hoist Gracie, you know, I don't want to call him skinny, but he wasn't like the most jacked guy. And he's in there, and he's killing these bigger, stronger guys. And like, man, that stuff's awesome. And just also seeing like the warrior spirit he expressed to me. That's one of the things I remember too. Man, that guy's got no quit in him. He remained calm. He was able to come out on top. So that's what got me interested. And at the time in South Carolina, anyway, there really weren't, at least I couldn't find really any jiu-jitsu schools with, at least not with a black belt teaching. And so just through my own search, I was, again, I've said many times, very fortunate to find Jacare in Atlanta with Alliance. But I didn't know Jacare was, you know, famous in the jiu-jitsu world, so to speak. So, but when I went down there, one of the things looking back is those guys made me feel very welcome. Jacare made me feel very welcome. The guys that were there made me feel very well. It was hard training, but at the same time, you felt like you were part of something. And so that's one of the things that I really, when I started the school here in Greenville, that was one of my goals, is to try to kind of model as much of that as I could. And then one of the most awesome things that I've learned from the whole experience of jiu-jitsu is, you know, obviously the art itself and what that brings, but the people you get to meet. So Russell's one of those guys that probably, to be honest, you know, we probably would not have the friendship relationship we have had it not be for jiu-jitsu. You know, if you look at us from the outside, it might look like totally different people, but jiu-jitsu has kind of brought us together, and I've learned a lot from him. And, you know, he's a great friend, love him like a brother. And so anyway, I'll let him kind of tell a little bit more how we met, if he'd like to, and kind of tell his story, whatever he wants to share today. And then, and we never have a hard time talking and philosophizing, if that's a word.
We call it bullshit.
So, but anyway, love Russell and appreciate him taking his time to be here today. And always fun talking to Russell. So tell us just a little bit of your story, Russell.
Yeah, Billy, I love you to death, man. Every time I see you, I tell you I love you. You know, and I, you know, it's funny because you say like different friendships within this. You know, what we do in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, it brings different people together. It's like you and I have different life views. We have similarities in some of the stuff that, you know, we went through in our past. And then, like, Honeycutt and I couldn't be more fucking different than what we are. But yet, there's a common thread that, you know, kind of sews us all together. And, yeah, I mean, I'm sure people get tired of me texting them, telling them I love them. But, hey, man, if you're in that circle, I don't apologize for that. But, yeah, so I've told this a couple times, but so Billy and I met back in 2006. It was the summertime. And just somebody said, hey, you ever heard of jiu-jitsu? I was like, yeah, from UFC. I got kind of I wouldn't say a checkered past, but didn't always, toe the line of regular law, I guess. But, and then I worked in bars and stuff. So, always getting into it. And I walked in the gym. Now, Billy talks about welcoming. Yeah, Billy was welcoming, but at the time, it was a very different atmosphere. It attracted a certain type of person, maybe a knucklehead or two. And, it was fun. I loved it. It was kind of something that I was missing in my life because I'd always played sports and kind of had that camaraderie, but never really liked the team aspect because, I think it should always lay on the individual. And, coming up playing football, one thing that always pissed me off is, somebody always blamed the person next to him. And it's like, come on, man, if all of us do our job, then there shouldn't be anybody to blame. So what I liked about being on the mats is, hey, dude, if you got your ass beat, you got your ass beat. If you beat somebody's ass, you beat somebody's ass. Bottom line, and every day was different. So I definitely saw it as a challenge, and I needed something like that in my life because a couple years before then, it was 4 years before that, I had something kind of really tragic happen to me, and it sent me spiraling a little bit. And it was right around the time my wife and I met. So I worked through a lot of issues with that, and I kind of punched out the other side. But it was, once I found jiu-jitsu, it kind of just mellowed me out. Which, what's funny, man, with all this stuff going on, I haven't been on the mats for like 2 months. I am edgy as hell. Like, I do have a mean streak, and I get very angry, and I kept myself up all night just being pissed off at somebody. And did no goddamn good except for keeping me up because that person didn't know I was pissed at him. So anyways, but yeah, no, Billy has been very influential in not only my life, but my wife, in me introducing him to other people in my social circle, like, Joanne. And so it's been a really great friendship. And I wouldn't even call it a friendship, man, because like you and Louise are like family to me. I remember I've seen your kids grow up.
Yep.
I remember we'd go out to lunch every Saturday, the whole crew. And Mackenzie and Walker would be there. She'd be reading a book at a table. And that's what's interesting is I was asking Dana, and I've always asked you, seeing Walker kind of come up. And, I grew up in a family where my parents didn't have friends. So they just worked. Every day they just worked. And that was kind of the And I don't know, like now, as they've retired and gotten older, they have a huge social circle. So back then, I don't know if it was because they just had to work so much to keep us afloat. Like, my dad worked 2 jobs, my mom worked, and then my sister and I were latchkey kids. I didn't grow up poor by any means, but it definitely was, it was a middle to lower middle class managed family to where we never went without. But, my first car was my parents' hand-me-down car, and I had to pay them $500 for the damn thing. So To go back to what I've always wondered is, like, when you see Walker kind of grew up around all of us. And to get back to your point also about us not, jiu-jitsu being that common thread, what's interesting is that if somebody sees me and somebody sees you, I mean, you look like a goddamn action figure at 50-something. I can only wish to, be in your shape when I'm your age. I'm 43 and I'm still struggling. But the outside perception is very interesting because here, I look like a knucklehead. I'm heavily tattooed. I'm larger. You and I do have cauliflower ears, but, So to expose Walker to that kind of environment, and then he goes back to his social network into school where these people, their families get together and do barbecues on the weekend where, it's like, what does your dad do? Well, he works people out and he's got a bunch of fucking gorillas that he rolls around with on a daily basis. So it's like, what kind of perception he had coming up and growing up, which I think he's matured very well into a man. He took it upon himself to go to the Citadel. I was proud of him because, again, we talked a lot as he was growing up about issues, because I had some very similar issues. growing up. So, yeah, you know, fucking long-winded explanation, but I think a lot of times to find something that challenges you brings you closer to people. So it's, you know, I was never in the military, but, you know, again, you talk about podcasts with people. You know Tom. I don't really know Tom, but, you know, we know Alan. Alan mm-hmm. came from a military background, and then I got to know some other people through jiu-jitsu, and it's funny because when you have a challenging experience like that, it tends to bring people closer together. Because if you notice, like, I'm not bagging on golf, but I got a lot other better things to do than chase a fucking white ball around a swath of land on the weekends. But sometimes I look at guys that are golf buddies, and not discounting their friendship, but it's weird because if you look at the kind of ties that we have, and I think it has to do with that visceral experience and the uncomfortableness and, you know, doing something that most people do not want to do, that it brings you closer, and there's like this underlining kind of sense of, hey, no matter what happens, I can go to this person.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I you know, I've tried to kind of, we've talked about it a few times, you know, even, you know, trying to understand it better. There's definitely something to it. Every, you know, I was listening to, Alberto Crane has a, I'm trying to hopefully get him on this podcast.
Oh, God.
But he, you know, I was listening to one of his podcasts, and he was talking about, you know, the tribe aspect and all that with jiu-jitsu. And then also with, you know, he's now the CEO of TacFit, which we integrate that into our training as well. And so, you know, and then kind of trying to understand it almost from a scientific standpoint, what you know, why that happens. And so I think we talked about before, like even, you know, oxytocin. So if you look at that, like, there's not, and of course, you know, being Brazilian jiu-jitsu, we've got to meet a lot of Brazilians, and their culture is different.
Oh, right? Totally different.
So one of the things I love going to, you know, Hoffa obviously is very, you know, we know him, and so, but you go to you know, not even to a tournament, just a training or whatever, and all the guys are hugging each other.
Oh, yeah,
know?
Man.
And so,
oh,
yeah. You know, that's not necessarily a, what you see necessarily in the U.S., like guys that just come up and just hug each other when they see each other. So it's something about that. And, of course, obviously in jiu-jitsu, you don't have a choice.
Yeah, exactly, man.
you're physically touching.
No.
You know? Even though you might be fighting, so to speak, you're actually physically touching. And there's something about that. And I've said it before, and I really truly believe this. And, you know, if the world would be a better place if everybody did jiu-jitsu. You know, I really do believe that. Like, it really, even in Dubai, you know, in their school program, they really, it's a huge piece. I think they've got, you know, and, you know, it's not necessarily, it could be for everybody. It's not necessarily for everybody. But I think the more people, and now that's what, you know, what you talked about. I think one of the things that's been kind of interesting with how, you know, at least within our organization, because I've always been Alliance, so I can't speak for how other, you know, organizations run, but, you know, like you said, in the early days, I think it's pretty much true for all jiu-jitsu schools. You came in and you shook hands and said, hey, all right, and let's do the warm-up, and then if you weren't in shape, you know, you might not make it through that, and then you did a couple of techniques, and then you rolled.
Yeah, you got after it, man.
And then it's just, you know, survival of the fittest, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that was, we enjoyed that, but that's not necessarily for everyone. And I think now with our fundamentals and beginner class, where you kind of more softly introducing it, we're able to keep more people, and then we're able to spread it more. And so more people can benefit from the, you know, and you don't have to be a hardcore, like, competitive jiu-jitsu player to get the benefits of it. I think that's another piece of it. But, yeah, I think that shared, like I said, that shared common, you know, struggle.
Yeah.
Is something that, you know, and like you mentioned football as an example. You know, I love playing football growing up, just played through high school, but that's not something you're going to do. You may have those relationships forever, but you're not going to continue to play football forever.
Yeah.
Whereas jiu-jitsu, I'm hoping.
Well, you
can keep doing that till I die.
As we get older, you know, and it's kind of interesting because I look at that because I'm beat up, you know. I mean, you know, my physical.
Yeah.
You know, but as you get older, you, and again, as you become a black belt, whatever, I think you do have that right to be a little choosy about who you train with.
Yeah, you gotta be smart about your.
You gotta be smart, man, because we're not training to be world champions, man. You know, I made peace with me being a hobbyist many years ago, you know? So I'm not looking for any glory. I'm just in here trying to hang out with my buddies, get a good workout in, make sure I'm staying sharp. But a point you made, and yeah, we talked about this many times, because remember when I was going through my undergrad, I wanted to do, like, a study. You know, I was trying to build a questionnaire to find out that common thread, because there are so many different personality types, so many different belief structures, so many different backgrounds, so many different personalities that it doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. You know, like, again, not to go back to, you know, you, Adam, and I, but you and Adam are kind of similar. Y'all got a very strong, you know, very similar, strong belief structure, and y'all guys come from, you know, kind of smaller towns in the South. Strong family upbringing. You and I shared, you know, kind of a similar path in our past. But where me, I grew up, when I was younger, I grew up in the inner city of Tampa. Wasn't the most friendly environment. You know, I remember when I was in fourth grade, they burned crack houses down across my grandmother's house. And they caught us on the news because my mom, because we were living with my grandmother at the time, my mom, my dad, my sister. And, you know, we're sitting there on a chain link fence, and they're bulldozing and burning down crack houses outside. I mean, my grandmother would find crack rocks all the time in her yard.
Oh, my God.
You know, so I was, you know, I grew up in a, I would say, a lower middle class area of Tampa back in the 80s. I went through elementary school there. So to say that, like, completely different pasts, completely different upbringings. But for some reason, you know, we found this thing that drew us, because again, it wasn't the people that drew us to it at first, it was the thing that drew us to the people.
Yeah.
So again, a lot of times when you look at friendships and relationships, that's what drives you to go to something. Where what's interesting, you know, because like CrossFit, okay, I don't mean to, you know my fucking thoughts about it, I hate it. We've done it. We did Seal Fit together. We did all that. You know, I did the work with you, but you got me into that. I would never seek that out and find a group of people. Now, I'm not saying that doesn't happen, but I think in the world of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, what I've seen, because I've tried the opposite. Mm-hmm. I had a large social network outside of the gym, and I've tried getting all of them into it. Nobody stayed. Not one of them got into it. Same with Boom, Ryan. Yeah. Ryan did the same thing. His brother came back, but how many people did he bring in? Like Money and Brad. You know, I had Omar in here, and then I can't forget a couple other people, but it's weird because, and it may have been that time that we went through, because again, we went through a very different time period of this. I mean, whatever it is, you know, this activity of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and it wasn't for everybody at the time, like you're saying. But now, and I'm not trying to discredit, it has gotten a little bit softer, I think, for good reasons, because again, you're not putting somebody through that
almost like a crucible.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Yeah. You know, where you come in and you get your ass beat for, you know, a year, and then finally someone comes in behind you and you're like, oh, okay, now I got somebody I can do this to. And then that person has to suffer, and then somebody comes in behind them. Whereas now, you get a pool of people that may be interested, and then you just, you know, you have them sit at the kiddie table for a while, and you feed them, and they're looking at the adult table, and they get a little bit more hungry, and they're like, "Oh, okay, I think I can do this." And the good thing about that is we don't have to worry about someone kicking us in the face when we're rolling, or knocking out a tooth, or poking us in the damn eye. But it's one of those things where I would like to examine what I was talking about, if it's the opposite now, to where, you know, you'll get a group of friends that say, hey, I want to do this, and they go through the classes, and then they come up. Whereas us, it was the activity that brought us together.
Yeah.
And formed a stronger friendship. It wasn't us having a strong friendship getting into the activity.
Interesting.
So that's what I've always looked at. And, you know, I don't know if you can do a comparative study now, to, you know, people who have been in this thing for, you know, 15 years, like myself, 20?
Yeah, like 20 years now.
Yeah, 20 years. And then those cats like Logan who are probably 6 or 8 years in, mm-hmm. you know, to say, okay, what happened? Like, what triggered you to get to this point? But at the same time, man, it's just fucking rolling. You know, it's just slapping hands and trying to beat the shit out of each other in a controlled environment.
I heard a word the other thing. It was not even referring to jiu-jitsu, but it was it was a Burr Crane again. They were talking. They called it controlled beast mode.
Mm.
So it, which is kind of interesting because it kind of reflects back to jiu-jitsu too. Because you know, it's you have to. I mean, once you get to a higher level, it's people from the outside looking it don't really understand. It may look like they're trying to kill each other, but it's controlled.
Oh,
like
for
it's,
sure,
it's controlled. Like I don't worry about you know. I mean, certainly you could, something could go weird and we could hurt each other, but yeah. I don't worry about when I'm training with you getting hurt.
Yeah, but, for sure.
You know, I know it's going to be hard.
Yeah.
But I'm not worried about you cranking on my neck. I'm not worried about you.
No, yeah.
And that sort of thing. So it's control, but it's still hard training.
Yeah, and it's, you know? I think that has to come with technical proficiency.
Yeah.
You know, because you learn, and a lot of times in here, what happens when people get hurt, and you see it in stand up. And also you see it like, you know, when you start throwing in lockdowns or you start trying to take people to a point where it's putting pressure on a joint, if a person knows what they're doing, they're just going to give that position
right.
up.
Right.
They're going to be like, okay, man, I know you're going to sweep me and we'll just start over again and get going on, you know, we'll start from a scramble, whatever. You're like, I will give that up in order not to hurt myself or tweak something. Whereas what you see in the younger guys is they don't have that technical proficiency yet or that body awareness to realize, oh, okay, if I don't go with this and I try going in the opposite direction, there goes an MCL.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you still see it at a high level, but usually it's in like competition yeah. or something that goes yeah. awry. But yeah, I mean, I think the only time I've ever been hurt with you is when you busted my eye open when I was a white belt. And that's only because I snatched your ass down and I looked over your head and you came back up.
Yeah, you snapped. You hurt yourself.
I did. And a lot of times that's what you do in here, man. You know? You do hurt yourself.
I did go get some super glue for you then.
Yeah, we went to that Sphinx, man.
Missed half.
Nothing like a convenience store
yeah,
ER.
Yeah.
That was back in the day, though.
Yeah, I missed half my training because of that.
Yeah, squirt in there. Get some alcohol squirted in, shave it, pinch it closed. Yeah, you know, that's what kids are missing nowadays. Little convenience store, medic center.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it has been interesting. And what's cool about it is, you know, we did form this friendship. And through the 15 years of me knowing you, I've gone through a lot of changes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you first met me, I was, you know, a knucklehead bartender who decided to go back to school. I went back to school, graduated. I got married during that time. Yeah, it's weird because you've always, like, you and this gym are a part of my life. And, you know, outside of jiu-jitsu and stuff like that, what's interesting is I thought about this, is that if something ever happened to where I would be pushed out of this environment, so say I did something and I would be pushed out, then it's like, okay, what? You would almost lose part of yourself, because like almost a little bit of an identity crisis,
mm-hmm.
because you belong to something. You know, it's almost like a form of tribalism to where you yeah. belong to something yeah. and you depend on these people and depend on these relationships to kind of get you through hard times. You know, so I kind of had a bit of mental masturbation about that, to where I was like, okay, what would this scenario look like? And I was like, wow, man, that would fucking suck. You know, but what I do think is, like, having an environment like this, it teaches you how to act in the real world. You know, because there are consequences to your action.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I talk shit, you know, I talk shit to everybody. I talk shit to Rafael, I talk shit to Honeycutt, you. I mean, I love y'all, but I want to get in your head so I can beat you. But, you know, I tell Rafael all the time, he's lucky he can kick my ass. But what it does is it teaches me when I leave here, okay, I can't be that person. I have to be respectful. I, you know, show people respect. And I think a lot of it has to come with you understand repercussions.
Mm-hmm.
So folks like us aren't quick to get out of cars when someone cuts us off. Yeah. Now, if you want to get out of a car, that's no problem, man. I got a fantasy of thumping your head up against your fender, you know. But again, I'm not going to start that.
Yeah.
So it is interesting, because when you do get into an environment like we have, and it's a bunch of normal people.
Yep.
that's the thing. We're not extraordinary folks. You know, you're not talking about special operators, Navy SEALs. I mean, yeah, we might have some CEOs, high-performing individuals, very competitive. I would say if you get into this and you stay with it, you do have a sense of competitive nature, because if you're not competitive, it's going to be a very rough road. And I'm not saying you have to be like super, super competitive. And let me clarify, what I mean by competitive is I think the best kind of competitive person there is one that's not with others, but with themselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so, you know, we talk about this a lot. I used to be a badass, you know, I mean, growing up, I was weak until I went to college. You know, I might've played this tough guy, but I'll never forget when I got, so to give a little background, I got recruited to play for a pretty much a glorified high school up in North Carolina, Chowan College. And, you know, I was all big and bad. I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna play college football, blah, 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 blah. Dude, I went up there and got homesick like a five-year-old child. I was on the phone with my mom. You're like, you need to pick me up. I was crying. My mom was like, I drove your ass 12 hours. No, get over it, big boy. Toughen up, you know. And but I think that was one stage in my life that pushed me through a barrier. And I think that's important for people because, you know, a lot of times in life we get complacent and don't realize it until we get uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, another time in my life is when I went through that thing in 2002. And then I got through that, and then I went through school, and I went jujitsu. You know, when I got my black belt, I was like, wow. But, you know, when I got my black belt, hell, you might as well throw in a white belt on me because I felt more uncomfortable ever.
Yeah, I can relate to that, too.
It was funny. Every black belt can.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not talking to, like, the elite, but everybody I've talked to said it's funny because when you first get it, it's like someone just hit control alt delete and you forgot everything.
Yeah.
You know, and like I was saying on Chris's here, and like I was saying on his podcast, I had never suffered performance anxiety. You remember? I mean, how many times have we been to tournaments and I'm just like, okay, cool, man, let me just go in, do it, get out. It wasn't until I got my damn black belt, all of a sudden I was like, oh my God, I got butterflies. What is this? What is this? What's happening? You know, it freaked me out. So it took a lot to deal with and punch me through that uncomfortable situation. But, and it's like careers. And you're constantly doing this because you're constantly, and I give a shit about it because, you know, you're always looking for the newest, greatest thing. But what you're also doing is looking to better yourself through not being complacent. So more people need to kind of examine where they're at. And I'm not saying if you're happy, change anything. But if you're not being challenged or you're going through the motions, look on making a little change in your life to kind of, you know, grow a little bit.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think that's one of the things. I think, you know, I'm certainly not the person who made this up, but and I'm sure I've heard it somewhere, but more recently I've kind of had this thought of like, you know, success means different things to different people.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But, you know, and I heard Tom say this, and this is part of, you know, what, you know, you're expressing here, and kind of one of my, I guess, one of the themes for the podcast is like people not sharing just the, you know, again, I think they've even done studies on this. I can't remember where, but like if you take two groups of people and you do like a survey looking at like their happiness, right? And let's say those two groups both rate like a 7 on a scale of 1 to 10. And then you have one group look at social media for like 15 minutes and then go back and do it again. They're less happy because most of the stuff out there is all like, oh, I'm so great. I'm, you know, and not all successful people will share the failures.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And so I think almost everybody, you know, I mean, obviously I don't know every single situation, but, you know,
A general statement
is that they've all had that. They just don't necessarily talk about it, you know.
Yeah.
And so when people get down, sometimes they, oh, it's just me. And so, you know, and I think, so, but on the other side of that, I think sometimes, like you're saying, if you're not aware of it, success can act, whatever your term is for success, can actually lead to
Atrophy,
right? Because you just keep doing what you're doing because that's what got you there. But if you're not looking to, and you're not willing to, it's again, we talk about fear all the time, but it's like, and that can mean different things to people too, but fear of failure, whatever that means to you, is also huge. So, like, the thing again about jiu-jitsu is, like, you know, you face that. You if you have a fear of failure, you're just going to get stuck.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so you have to be willing to kind of, and I know I deal with that. And so that's why I think competition, I like doing competition. I shouldn't say that. I can't say I'd ever go into a competition and say, oh, I'm so excited about being here for competition, to be honest. I do it because I don't like it.
Yeah, no, that's, I mean.
It makes me uncomfortable, but always learn from it.
Yeah.
You know, I always learn from the experience. And, you know, if you get too, like I said, complacent, I think a lot of people, because if you look at it from outside, oh, they're successful, they're doing well. But, you know, to me, it's interesting. It's like everybody.
Oh, everybody's got their own. Yeah. Everybody's got their own bags. Everybody's got their own shit. Because I'm sure people, I mean, I'm sure people look at you. People, well, nobody here. I mean, there's only a small group of people that know me outside of here because, you know, I keep things segmented. You know how, you know, I get pretty particular about things. But, in, you know, people, again, you're always, a lot of people have a tendency to look at others and compare their success as a metric unto which they need to succeed.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, you know, you look out in the parking lot, you're like, oh man, that guy's got a Range Rover, that guy's got a Mercedes. What do I need to do to get that? Well, I mean, it's just a fucking object. You know, and you know, you talk about fears. Sometimes people don't address the fear of winning. Sometimes people are afraid to be successful because it proves something that they could do it and they had to get up off their ass and do it.
Yeah.
And you talk about other people's shit. I mean, there's days I don't want to get out of bed. You know, of course, you look at social media. What I love are all these people, and I'm not. I don't probably open the floodgates of hate on this one. But what's funny is you get all these inspirational people out there, and you've met a lot of them. One thing I wish they would address is saying, yeah, I have shitty mornings. I don't want to get up and do anything. I want to lay my ass in bed. But you know what? There's something in, you know, because I struggle with issues, and there's times where it takes me forever to get out of bed. And but I know if I stay in bed, I'm gonna feel like a big piece of shit because I've done it. I've just laid there and sulked and sat in bed till 12 o'clock in the afternoon. And all of a sudden I realize, what the fuck did that do? So, you know, you talk about morning rituals, and I mean, you know, my crazy ass, I was on the fucking cold and all that other stuff like way before. And, you know, every morning I do a morning stretching exercise routine. It's not much. And yeah, I do it right after I walk the dog. And the whole time I'm walking the dog, I'm just like, God damn it, don't do it. You don't have to do it. You know, you don't have to. I mean, it's just five exercises. But there's something in my head saying, come on, man, just don't do it. Just, you know, get on the computer, start working, log on. As soon as I walk the dog, feed the dog, put my contacts in, I'm like, God damn it, just do the five exercises. I do the five exercises. And then I take my, you know, then I turn on that goddamn cold shower every morning. And believe me, I've never had an enjoyable cold shower. I don't care if the water is 75 degrees. If it's 85 degrees outside, it still sucks. But you do it, and after it's done, you're like, okay, I'm ready to go. I'm ready to go. So I wish sometimes people, when they make videos online or they talk to people after they've done those, they're like, hey, you know, it took me a shit ton of effort to do this, but I knew what it would feel like afterwards. You know, it's like, I used to be 280 pounds, man. And the other day I did crazy shit by myself. I decided to do like a mile ruck after doing a hard workout. And I just put a 24 kilogram kettlebell in a backpack. And I was walking around the neighborhood for a mile. And I was like, holy shit, man. I used to weigh this much? Actually more, because I'm like 215, 220 now. And what's a 24, like 54 pounds?
Yeah, 53.
Yeah, man, that's fucking, I mean, just think, that isn't even as much as I used to weigh.
Yeah.
You know, so, and to go back to some of your thing, what, I don't know if it inspires me, but what makes me do some of the things I do, and, you know, if yesterday when I was at home and it was raining, I could have made the excuse to not work out or not get out and run, but I was like, fuck, man, I have a bit of self-loathing and hatred. Not to become that person I once was.
Yeah.
You know? And I think everybody could be, you know, you talk about heroes and, you know, we all look nowadays at social media and podcasts and like, you know, your intro, there are these like, bigger than life figures. And I think they're important because it gives people, it gives them kind of that, okay, I'll take my first step. But a lot of times I look at you for inspiration because, dude, you're a fucking small country kid from 96.
Yes.
You know? And now, I mean, you've met more people in our environment. And this is what I said on your podcast. I was like, dude, Billy Fletcher has accidentally run into more superstars in the MMA and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu world than, like, Joe Rogan. You know, just a small guy from 96 who inserted himself into this crazy world with the old man, you know, or Jacare. And you know, you kind of just lived life. And I think more people, you know, don't use another person as a as saying, hey, I can do this, but don't emulate another person's life. You know, try to take your own path, take your own risks, have failures.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Be your own hero.
Yeah. Be your own hero,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
Because you only, and you talk about stories. You know, one of the, you know, everybody loves, because I got fucking shit tons of stories, man, because I've kind of lived a crazy life. And, but at an early age, I'll never forget this. I was bartending for this old dude, and I was probably like 22. And, you know, he was just this old drunk, which I don't mind an old drunk. And I was talking to him, and he's like, well, what do you want to do? I was like, well, you know, I'm saving up for retirement. He goes, let me tell you something. The best thing you could do is fucking retire now and then work until you're after my age, because you can enjoy the shit you think you're going to want to do at my age, but you ain't going to be able to enjoy it because you're going to be old. So just be broke while you're young. Live a life. You know, the job I had before, I worked in an office environment, and it's funny because we would get these interns from universities around here, and these kids, all they were worried about was that rat race. And I'm like, dude, you're fucking 22. You're lucky because your parents paid for your college, so you're not strapped for debt. Go get a job bartending. Go get a job being a construction worker and be around some real people that can teach you some life values. You know? I mean, I learned way more life, I would say, just tools from being a concrete finisher, working in a, you know, Walmart distribution center, working at a strip club. You know, I mean, all these things I've done in my, you know, I mean, I used to work in a prison. You know, all these things I've done in my life kind of culminated into me being able to be successful today. You know, so it's, and at the end of the day, when you die, all the shit you buy is either going to get thrown in the trash or given to somebody else. And the only thing you'll have are your stories.
Yeah.
And the relationships you made with other people. Those are to me, I feel I'm the richest man in the world. You know, we all bust each other's balls. You know, I mean, we're pretty brutal, especially, you know, Ryan and I and Rafael and I. But, you know, surround yourself with people that will lift you up but keep you humble.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's another thing about jiu-jitsu too, is like you mentioned the humble part is that, you know, I've had the opportunity to meet a lot of great, I mean, and maybe there's some people out there that aren't humble. I'm sure there are, but the ones I've met, they've all been that way. They've always been, you know, if you meet, you know, Cabrinha, Marcella, those guys, you know, Lucas, I mean, you couldn't meet nicer people. Now, I'm glad that they're not my friends.
Yeah. I mean, you wouldn't want to, you know.
But, you know, but, you know, they're not walking around with a chip on their shoulder.
Oh, like not said, at
they're
all.
They're not going to have, you know, road rage and getting a fight on the freeway, for sure. And I think that's another one of the cool, you know, cool things about you know, the stuff we do is it keeps you humble. And also, you know, like you said, because we haven't been able to do it, is recently because of you know, the pandemic stuff, but you know, it also is a great stress reliever, you know.
It gets
all that out, you know. So
dude, I'll never, this was funny, man, because I mean the one, I guess, material thing I do kind of get into is watches. I really like nice watches, and I'll never forget one night, man. I left here after teaching class, and I got home and the damn watch fell out of his bag, and it knocked some shit loose, and I was like, ah, fuck it, I'll just pay to get it repaired. You know, I mean, if I did that shit at, like, before class, yeah, I'm sure I would have lost my shit. But yeah, because I was depleted, you know, you're I think people are like glasses, you know, like empty glasses. And what's great about what we do is, you know, because throughout your day, you're taking in not only so much information, so much shit, so much responsibilities. You know, I don't have kids, so I can only imagine what that stress could be like, you know, if you're at work and you're wondering what your kid's doing, or you're having child problems, or, you know, you have financial issues, it's always on your mind. So again, when someone cuts you off in a road, all of a sudden that glass is just filled up and it's spilling over. Where we're lucky in the fact that, you know, we deal with all those still. You know, there's people we work out with that deal with those exact issues, but you come in here for about an hour and a half, you blow it out, and this way you go home and, you know, you kiss your wife, you kiss your kids, or, you know, you make dinner, or I don't know what everybody does here, but... I mean, y'all, I just slip into the ether. Like, no one knows the fuck I do. You know, I get sideways on the weekends, but...
Yeah, always get back on Monday, that.
Yeah, man, you always got to do it, as shitty as I feel, you know? Come in here reeking of booze, have Billy beat the shit out of me. But, yeah, so, I mean... So, I think it is very important to kind of, not examine your life too much, because, God, you can definitely spiral out of control doing that. But, you know, hey, just take it one day at a time, too. You know, because what's the worst that's going to happen? You go to sleep, wake up tomorrow. I mean, you could not wake up. Hell, you won't know the difference.
I heard a great one yesterday. It was, let's see if I don't mess it up. It was the 5x5 rule or something. And so it was basically, if you have something that upsets you, so you think about it, is that going to have an impact 5 years down the road? Is that going to matter, right?
Yeah.
If it doesn't matter 5 years down the road, don't think about more than 5 minutes. And I was like, that's pretty interesting. So it's kind of what you're, you know, and so, you know, day by day, you know, don't waste days. That's why, I think I mentioned that on another podcast or something. But I remember when I turned 50, I'm a little slow to learn. So 50, hey. I remember writing a note to myself, like, no more wasted days. That doesn't mean, like, don't take a day off.
Yeah, rest. I mean, yeah.
It means, you know, like you're saying, like you can always find something productive each day. And because, honestly, you don't know. You don't know if you're going to be here tomorrow. And so we talk about.
Hey, I'd hate to tell everybody, man, the only thing certain is we are going to take that fucking dirt nap.
Yeah. And so that's kind of how, you know, I really started kind of thinking about that. Because sometimes you can focus. If you have, you know, it's good to have goals and that sort of thing. I encourage that. But you can focus so much on the future. You know, you're not focusing on what you're doing that day. That's one of the things I'm working on, is just also trying to be present. You know, not thinking about the next thing, but try to, you know, because really you only got the time you have right now. And again, you know, just tying that back into jiu-jitsu, that's one thing about jiu-jitsu, is like when you're on the mat, you know, me and you are rolling, I can't be thinking about something
else. No, it's forced meditation. It's forced meditation.
You better focus on the guy in front of you.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting, you talk about, you know, kind of, so, I try to run quite a bit. I love running. I find it very cathartic. And, hell, I got to the point now where I don't even like running with headphones. I just have my phone to clock miles. But what's interesting is where we live, it's very hilly. And when they shut down the park, I had no choice but to take all these different routes with all these monster hills. And I was telling Dana how I, you know, was just trugging along this hill, and she was like, oh my God, it was a big ass hill. I was like, yeah, but you know what's crazy? When you wear a hat and you don't look up, all you got to do is count those little breaks in the sidewalk. So what I would do is I would count the steps to each break, and I'd be like, okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Next thing you know, you're at the top of the hill, man.
Yep.
So sometimes when you have a goal, don't always look at that goal. Just be like, okay, this is where I want to be. Let me concentrate on that 1, 2. Let me concentrate on those breaks.
Yeah.
You know, let me concentrate getting to that next lamppost.
Yep.
Next lamppost. Yep. Next lamppost.
Yeah.
So here's what's funny. In the beginning of all this, to bring it full circle, you were asking me to introduce myself and explain who I was. And I don't know if I did a great job with that. But the thing that I've always found interesting is everybody has their own perception of who they are. And I've always been really sensitive to that, because I never wanted to be somebody who I wasn't. But it's funny hearing y'all talk about me. because sometimes I don't think I come off as bad as I do, but I guess I do. But I told the story on the podcast about how you and I met, and I wouldn't sign the contract, and then y'all had a bet on me. So let me get
we didn't have a bet.
Let me get the impression of when you first met me.
So, I mean, so I think, yeah, you're a big, strong guy, you know, aggressive, you know, in the training. And so for people that don't really know much about jiu-jitsu, it's like, you know, so that kind of works against you if somebody you're working with has technique, because they gas out really quick. So, mm-hmm. you know, like I always kind of joke about it. Like if someone, you know, when I'm trying to explain like physical attributes, like, you know, because, you know, I teach strength and conditioning. So strength always been a big part, you know, probably because I, talking about like backgrounds, I grew up as a skinny, weak kid. I think I shared it, I won't share it, but I think I did that race last year. You sent me something and I said, basically, I don't want to go back to that
yeah.
pathetic person I
yeah.
was. So same kind of thing you're saying, right? So, because that's how I viewed myself when I look back at some of this stuff. And so, you know, I don't want to be that again. I want to, you know, I have a different identity of what I want to be mm-hmm. like. And so, I have to work on that. So,
yeah, that person you want to become.
I want to be that person I want to become. So, I know that that takes work and a certain, you know, mindset and so forth. So, what the heck was I going on that? But anyway, but in jiu-jitsu, like you come in and if you're using a lot of energy and you don't have the technique, you get tired. So no matter how strong you are, when you're fatigued, it's like, I think it was, who was it?
Vince Lombardi,
right?
Yeah.
You know, fatigue makes cowards of us all. It's not you're a coward, you just don't have anything to
give. You
can't,
get. Yeah.
So now you're weak.
Tanks, yeah,
now,
tanks
okay,
empty.
You know. So, but I'd rather, if it was a, you know, in a situation, you know, a big strong guy, you got to at least be able to handle him for the first like
2 minutes.
2 minutes, right?
Yeah.
Now, if I got somebody that's got great conditioning but it's weak, I'm not worried about them at all.
Yeah.
because they, you know, they can't make it through the first 2 minutes. So
yeah.
It's kind of two different scenarios there. So that's what I recall. But what really that whole conversation came up because Anna
mm-hmm.
Stankiewicz was you know, helping at the gym at the time. She also was. You know, she had babysit for the kids and all that. So Derek and I went to lunch one day. I didn't work there, I think, but she was at the pizza place.
She's at Barley's where Dana worked, yeah.
Did she work there some too? Or she just, anyway.
Who, Anna?
I think Anna.
Anna worked in the bar scene downtown okay. with
but
all of us.
I think we might have all went out to lunch or something.
Yeah.
And of course, she knew you. I didn't mm-hmm. really know you other than just, and I don't think Derek really even knew
no,
you.
No. Anna knew me from back in the, like,
in,
you know.
When you were bartending.
Yeah.
And we're talking, and Derek was like, he's never, because you wouldn't join, you always pay the math fee. And so
and that's right, people. 3 months, three times a week, every
you're
week,
like,
20
Russell,
bucks.
You would save a
math.
Lot of money if you just joined
do the math. I never said what I do smart. It's just what I do. Anyways.
Anyway, and so then we, you know, we roll hard every day. And so Anna was like, Russell's like the toughest guy in Greenville. I've seen him break a bottle over somebody's head and all that stuff.
And
we're like, okay, he's tough, but he ain't gonna. And so I remember like, he's not gonna stick. And so that was the conversation I remember. And then I remember I got to tell that story when you got you. It was one of the most rewarding experiences
yeah.
for me because you proved me wrong, you know. and you not only did you stick, you became a black belt. And, you know, that's. Really honestly, you know, as I get older, I've mentioned this a few times, that's one of the most rewarding things for me as a coach. Or, you know, I mean, I don't really, I consider you more of a friend. I don't seem like I'm your
yeah,
coach.
Yeah, but you were originally my first coach.
Beginning,
yeah.
You know, I was, you were a student, really. And so seeing people evolve and grow, not just as jiu-jitsu practitioners, but as human beings and as men, because, you know, most of the people I've trained in jiu-jitsu have been men. You know, even like with, I was thinking about this, is like, you know, Chad is out in California with his own school. And then you have, you know, Richard's got his own place. Alex is teaching down in Anderson. David.
Yeah.
David really wasn't ever really a student of mine, but, you know, he's teaching over at UFC. So it's kind of, you know, it's kind of nice to be able to kind of reflect. It's like, man, you know, I had a little piece in that.
You had a big piece,
with those guys. And now, you know, I guess Chad being so far away, it's kind of very interesting. Like, wow, he's, you know, he's in the big, you know, he's not.
He's
out there.
He's been, you know,
in the mecca of
jiu-jitsu
in the U.S.
You know, I mean, he was teaching at Uriah School, you know. So here's a small punk kid, South Carolina, I mean, dude, we beat the shit out of him. I mean, I remember Derek put him to sleep with a triangle. Wouldn't let, like, Chad Taft, he wouldn't let him go. Was, you know, to you people out there, yeah, it may seem like a dickhead move, but again, it wasn't nice times. And then he, like, yeah, so he started out the small kid from Greenville, man, and then he just kind of inserted himself and followed, you know, followed his stuff, went out there and did his thing. But, no, I was one of the, and like I said, when you gave me my black belt, when you and Rafael gave me my black belt, that was one, you know, I don't get teared up much, man, but, you know, one of the greatest times when you gave me my brown belt on the podium, you and Rafael, and then when you gave me my black belt that day, because, again, Rafael loves to fuck with me. So, again, he gave Chad his and then David his and was like, okay, guys, that's it. And then Ryan was sitting next to me. He goes, I told you you ain't going to get your black belt today. And I was pissed, man. And they'd be like, no, we got one more. And then you all did that to me, and Dana showed up. No, that was one of the most special days of my life.
Yep.
You know, it was great. And you know, and what's great about that, and I have taken this kind of mindset into my new career because, you know, I decided to change careers in the middle of all this shit. But when I wake up every day, I try to earn my job. Mm. You know, just like every time you step on the mat, I think you have to earn your belt.
Yep.
And that's just kind of the school where we came from because it wasn't, you know, I'm not taking anything away from saying that, you know, getting belts nowadays is not special. It's special to everybody. But, you know, and this is my perception. This is nobody else's perception. So please don't think that I'm putting this on anybody else. The way I perceived it is if I had a certain belt, it should represent a certain technical and competitive level. So I always try to represent that. So, you know, every day I come in and try to earn my black belt, you know, because I've been tapped by fucking blue belts and it stung. It hurt bad, but I didn't come in at my best. You know, and that's the great thing about jiu-jitsu. After someone, it was a purple belt actually, not a blue belt. But
I've been tapped by blue belts.
I've been caught, man. I've been caught messing around sleeping. But no, there was a guy, a purple belt, who tapped me out twice because, again, what's great about jiu-jitsu is once you get your purple belt, the knowledge is kind of the same. You know, once you get past the fundamentals in learning that, the rest is timing and execution. So if you're a black belt and say you went out the night before and kind of dabbled too much into some things and, you know, went to bed really late and woke up and decided you were going to come in here to get a sweat on and next thing you know, your ego's kicked in the ass because a purple belt took you to town, that's nobody to blame but yourself because you shouldn't have done the shit the night before and you didn't come in at 100% and you didn't earn that belt that day. You didn't, you know, I mean, I felt like fucking throwing it in the trash can as I left, but I knew there would always be tomorrow.
Yep.
You know, so again, you know, always try to earn something. Never think something is given to you or never take, always take opportunities, but earn those opportunities, you know?
Yep.
Like work hard.
Yep. Yep.
Work hard.
All right, man. So I appreciate you coming over today.
Yeah.
This was a blast. I knew we'd have a lot of fun doing that. Love you. And
love you too, brother.
Appreciate you. And we'll see you back on the mat soon.
June 1st. I didn't want to come back this week and only have to go on vacation next week and then have to restart again. So I'm just going to take till June 1st, okay. Billy.
All right.
All right.
See you, man.
See you.